Yes, you.
So, hi, I'm Ana Maria. So, I have a question. So, you mentioned that you want to increase the sensitivity of the LIGO. So, I was wondering, if you increase the sensitivity of LIGO, would it also be more sensitive to, for instance, earthquakes? And how hard would then it be to like differentiate between an earthquake and a class of gravitational waves?
Okay. Can you hear me? Okay. I will move to the slide later. Anyway, the point is the following. In principle, now also this generational detector are really quite, in principle, sensitive to the motion of the ground. Also in absence of earthquake, but of course when an earthquake arrives, it is a problem just now. Just to give you an idea, also in absence of earthquake, the motion of the ground is of the order of 10 to the minus 6 meters. And if you think that it is the same order of magnitude of the wavelength of the laser light that you use to interrogate the mirror, you understand that if you try to put the mirror on the ground and look at the signal, it is completely hopeless. You have to screen this at the moment that the sensitivity you need is something like 14 order of magnitude below the motion of the ground. And in order to obtain this, you essentially suspend the mirror to the, mechanical device that filter the motion of the ground. And these are quite effective and obtain the expected performance when not have, the principle is the principle of the transform function of the pendulum. If you have something which is suspended and you shake the suspension point, essentially if you shake the suspension point at a frequency which is above the internal frequency of the pendulum, you are reducing it. And if you have a multi-stage pendulum, this action is a product of the action of the single stage. And in this way, you can filter out the motion of the ground, and in principle also earthquake, but these are exceptional cases which are not really important by itself. The only point is that this can be done only above some threshold frequency, which is of the order of the Earth, which is the internal, it is the order of magnitude of the frequency, internal frequency of the suspension chain. So this is really in good control, and I anticipate a bit, but the next generation will be Einstein telescope, and we expect to gain more or less one order of magnitude in sensitivity. And there are estimates that have been done at the present, which show that, of course, we have to modify some aspect of the suspension, but there is no real issue here. It is something that is under control, and we can always, maybe here the real problem is that you do not want only to reduce the sensitivity when in the place and the frequency bandwidth in which we are, we have a good sensitivity now. But you want on also to push the sensitivity below some at lowest frequency, and this is a more demanding point. You can scale your chain of pendulum, but it is not trivial because if you have to move your sensitivity band to 1 hertz, essentially you should have internal frequency an order of magnitude below. And if you want to do that with pendulum, in principle, you have to construct a pendulum which is enormously larger, because it scales as the square root of the length. But there are the way to solve this problem, and this is something that is in the planning now.
Oh, yes, sir.
May I ask some further comments on CAGRA, especially at low frequency? I would guess that the Newtonian and the thermic noise being cryogenic and underground, did you already learn something or is still in commissioning phase? What is the status and the perspectives?
Yeah, okay, the main, there are two different points. One is that I did not say this morning, but Karya is built underground. And one of the reasons this is done is that in principle there is a peculiar noise I did not describe, which is the Newtonian gravity gradient noise, that in principle should be decreased in this scenario. Gravity gradient noise is essentially due to the fact that, as I said now in the previous answer, you can filter the motion of the ground. But if the ground is shaking, there are density variations. And this density variation, for example, in the ground, generate a local static fluctuating gravitational field which bypass any kind of mechanical device that you can use to reduce them. It. And this can be screened, it is a gravitational field. And so one option is to move in a place in which seismic motion is reduced. I would say...
Oh, but which are the results?
The point is that at the moment, at least in Karya, we are very far to the sensitivity in which this kind of noise can be seen. So I have no real new information about how much effective is this to reduce. There are a lot of modeling and simulation that try to understand how much this is reduced going in the depth. But at the moment, okay, I would say that there is also an active plan for doing in progress in Virgo and also in LIGO to check if there is some correlation between the motion on the ground and the signal which comes out from the detector. And this make estimate more robust. It is a problem that is important in the low frequency regime, and I would say that it will be a problem for ET, but in ET, if one possibility is that Einstein telescope will be built in Sardinia. Sardinia is very, very quiet.
Sorry, so you don't have data on the Newtonian noise of Karya yet?
Ah, no, no, no.
My question is, which are the data, the performance of Karya, especially regarding the Newtonian noise, and being, on the other hand, cryogenic on the thermic noise? You should have data of that or not?
The point is that in order to measure the, there are two different parts. About Newtonian noise, in order to measure directly Newtonian noise, you have to be at a sensitivity level in which this is possible. And this is not yet the case for Karya. About cryogenic, I would say that there is no discussion that reducing the temperature, it is the most direct way to reduce thermal noise. But also in this case, there are a lot of technological problems to solve, which are connected, for example, by the fact that we still have to suspend the mirror to a mechanical device, and at the same time you have to extract from the system a non-negligible amount of power which is put inside the mirror by the laser beam. Mirrors are quite good, but at the level of the power you want to use, there is anyway some tenth of watt which are dissipated inside the mirror. And extracting this, you can take advantage, and this is the approach that they are trying to follow, on radiation transmission. If you try to do some other things, for example, to put in contact with some external cold device, it is problematic because it carries inside at a low level, it bypasses the screening of seismic motion and carry inside the system a lot of disturbance. So also in this case, I would say no direct information about the performance.
Right, so yes, Avanish Bastusharam. I have two questions. So first of all, do you expect that we will find quantum gravity effects in gravitational waves, and if you do, how would they affect the waves?
Sorry, I...
Right. Do you expect that we will find quantum gravity effects in gravitational waves, and if you do, how would they affect the waves?
Quadratic, you mean?
How would they affect the waves? Quantum gravity effects.
Ah, quadruple.
Yeah, I see.
Okay, quadruple wave, typically the main contribution we see is about the quadruple contribution, quadruple mode contribution, which means that you look at the lowest approximation, you evaluate the change in quadruple moment of the source, and this gives typically a frequency of the gravitational wave, which is a factor two, the typical frequency, for example, the orbital motion. I am anticipating something that I will say tomorrow, but you can see that normally you see the quadruple mode. In some special case, also in the inspired phase, you can get some other contribution, for example, octupole or sextuple. And this is the case, for example, when the system which are coalescing is not symmetric. Maybe one of the black holes is much larger than the other one. And in this case, you can get other contribution, but I will give you some details tomorrow.
Right, maybe to follow up on that answer. So black hole mergers can analytically be described in the extreme mass ratio limit. So those limits are very interesting to study. Now, I do wonder, have we actually observed such mergers through gravitational waves?
Sorry, it's my problem, but I can't catch your question.
Is it me or the acoustic?
Could you speak a little bit slower clearer, because it's right. Very difficult to understand. Sorry.
Strange. Okay, maybe it's just like this. So black hole mergers can analytically be described in the extreme mass ratio limit, mm-hmm. Right? So those limits are interesting to study. Now, I wonder if we have actually observed such mergers through gravitational waves.
Well, it depends on how much you think extreme the difference is extreme. We have candidate events in which you have quite large asymmetry, but the limit you are mentioning means essentially that you can consider one of the two objects like something that lives in the metric generated by the other, and you can perturbatively add self-force contribution after that. And I would say that it is a difficult scenario for an Earthbound, at least for this generation of Earthbound detector. A typical candidate for this kind of study is LISA, because in LISA you are sensitive to a very much lower region in the frequency space, and you can look at what happened when a very large black hole, for example, a typical case is a large black hole at the center of a galaxy, there is another one, maybe, that is orbiting around it. And you, as you expect, the frequency of this signal is quite low in frequency, so it is out of reach for Virgo, not for LISA. But in principle, it is quite interesting because you are in a regime in which the orbit of this object that is moving around the bigger black hole is essentially sampling the characteristic of the metric near the horizon of the big black hole. And this is done for a long period of time, and you can get a lot of information about this regime, which is not a high curvature regime, but it is a strong field regime in the region you are exploring.
Okay,
so
thank you.
So this is for LISA in some sense.
Yeah,
great. And maybe in some more less extreme case for Einstein telescope.
Okay, thank you.
So can you go back to one of the first slide where you show the spectrum of gravitational waves as function of the frequency?
Just a second.
So, yeah, when you show the spectrum of gravitational waves, this one. So, there are really high frequency waves here, like 10 to the 8 Hertz. What are these? I missed it, but did you explain what the high frequency gravitational waves are? More than 10 to the 6 Hertz on the right, on the right part of the diagram. What are these waves?
You mean what kind of sources can give a contribution here, or what kind of...
So galactic center, visible...
No, this is not referred to this. This is just a legend for the limit show here. So in this region, there are typically, there are expected some cosmological contribution from stochastic background, and in the lesser... in reduced region, some kind of a contribution from some kind of coalescences. From internal mode of neutron stars, for example. But this is, has nothing to do. This is a general legend. Has nothing to do to this high frequency range.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
My name is Aidan Chatwin Davies. So a while ago, there was a prediction that quantum gravity effects should lead to echoes after black hole mergers. I was wondering, do you know what the status of this proposal is? And do you have any comments on this prediction?
Yes, I will give you maybe just one slide tomorrow. But the idea is that in some cases, you can guess that you can try to look a bit better to the structure of your system near the horizon. And one of the effects that you can guess could be present are the so-called echo. So if you, I will tell you more details tomorrow, but in a sense, in the final phase, there is a peculiar way to describe it, to understand what are this kind of normal modes. And a naive picture that can be used to guide the intuition is that around the black hole there is a light ring, and at least in the if you want to accept the optical regime, you can see that gravitational waves are in some sense trapped near this light ring. But now, if you try to solve this problem and you try to formalize this, you have a problem which you have. Essentially, it is equivalent to a sort of Schrödinger equation with a potential barrier, which is the model you get for this light ring. And you have some peculiar kind of boundary condition, in the sense that for a wave that moves to the left side toward the horizon, it is completely absorbed, so nothing escapes. And on the right side, you don't want to put in the model a wave that comes from the infinity. So the typical boundary condition is that you have something that moves in this direction and in this direction. Now, if you, and there are several models that suggest that this can be done, if you want to change a bit the structure of the horizon, you can, at least phenomenologically, describe this, describing the horizon in terms of some kind of reflection coefficient and transmissivity. And in this scenario, you can have several interesting scenarios. in which the radiation which moves in the, near the horizon is really a bit trapped and can have some kind of bouncing, and so this the structure of what you get, typically structure for a quasi-normal mode, is a damped oscillation. But if you have this kind of scenario, you will get something like that, but after some time, you will get another contribution, and so, and so, and so. And this is the reason why it's called an echo. I will say that there are attempts also in some recent work to check for the presence of this kind of echo in the Ligon-Virgo data. No success until now, but it is also true that this signal is quite weak. And so maybe this is something that can be improved in increasing the sensitivity too.
Thanks.
Anastasia Melukh, Bochum. Could you please go to slide 15 with sensitivities?
No, 50. Sensitivity should be, I think you.
Yes.
Okay,
so here we can see something like narrow peaks. I assume those are just some resonant frequencies, right? So my question is, why we see, for example, some peaks, if we compare to plots, some of them just disappear. Maybe in one of the of latest slides, I saw that there were like some peaks that were present in LIGO, but there were no such frequencies in Einstein telescopes, resonances. So why this happens?
Well, typically this can come from several reasons, but one possibility is a possible explanation for the fact that they are not in the same place in different detectors. For example, you can have your mirror, and at the first approximation, you can consider your mirror like a sort of rigid body. But this is not true, and there are internal elastic model oscillation for the mirror. And for example, this internal mode typically has a very, very large Q quality factor. And so they can get any kind of external disturbance and being excited. The more common possibility is that they are peak in the thermal noise, for example. And of course, the precise frequency of this kind of peak depend on maybe on the mirror shape, the mirror material. Also, it is important to understand that in some cases, some action can be put in place to reduce this kind of resonance by lowering its Q quality factor and things like that. So, but typically they are, or they can be, but this is uncommon in this frequency band when when at the end you have a good working detector, they can be externally influenced. For example, a good example is that here in Europe we have a 50 Hz contamination from the energy power. In USA, these are different frequencies.
I have also a question, Christian Döring. Maybe you said it, but I maybe forgot it. Why are the later detectors like Kaga and Virgo, which were built later, right? Why are there only 3 kilometers?
The reason why there are only 3 kilometers is essentially, I would say, an economic one.
Oh, okay.
Because at the time of the construction, I think, the main cost of this kind of experiment is the infrastructure, and in particular the vacuum. So it makes a big difference to have 3 kilometers or 4 kilometers. Also, there is in principle a problem of placement of the structure in some large enough, but I would say this is not the most important point. Anyway, in the case of Virgo, the reason for choosing 3 kilometers was mainly economical one at the time.
In small, in addition, how much, you need three detectors to pinpoint basically the event in the sky, right? With the new detector, you can probably cover more parts of the sky. How much does it increase roughly? How much more can
there
you cover
are
now?
Two different points that are a bit in tension, in the sense that if you look at this, you see what is the directionality. So a way to reduce, to cover better the sky is to orient each detector in such a way that the blind spot of one is covered by one other, which is in practice, not of course you have to do that in advance. I would say that there was not a peculiar study about this to put together Virgo and LIGO. So in some sense, if your target is to cover as much as possible the sky, which is a good option if you want essentially to do multi-messenger physics, and so you want to be able to keep an event wherever it is, this is a possibility. On the other hand, if you orient the detector in the same way, you have the special point in the sky in which the global sensitivity of the network is increased. I will say this is something that can be important in the initial phase, in which maybe we are waiting for a first detection and something like that, but as we expect the sensitivity will increase constantly in the future, I think that it will be more and more important to have a good coverage. So, for example, for Einstein telescope, it will be important. Actually, it is not trivial because we have to understand what is the scenario. When the Einstein telescope will be built, there will be another similar detector in some other place, and in this case, we can plan it. But experience show that it is always very difficult to decide this in advance and to make a memorandum of understanding between the part to orient this in a different way.
Hi, Anna Vogel. So I don't know if this makes sense, but I was wondering, because in the case of supernova neutrinos, we have something that we call supernova neutrino diffuse background. And do we have something similar in the case of gravitational waves, for example, a background coming from a lot of different sources through the universe? And if we have this, would this be measurable, or would it be interesting to measure this?
No. I will speak about this tomorrow, but there is a stochastic background, which is this kind of diffuse contribution from superposition. You can understand this at two levels, because there is a stochastic background which can be of cosmological origin, and a stochastic background which is of astrophysical origin. Maybe most intuitive is the astrophysical stochastic background. Imagine that you are looking in the sky, and you are looking quite far from us, so the number of events are a lot, but they are quite weak, and there is a high possibility that events are overlapped. When there is a high overlap probability of each single event, it is no more possible to disentangle the single contribution, and you see essentially like a kind of noise, which is signal, but it is noise. And you have to look at this with special techniques, because you can check for a specific waveform. You are just to try to find it using the statistical property. And a similar kind of gravitational wave background can be of cosmological origin. There are a huge number of possible mechanisms to generate this. The most basic one is the amplification of initial quantum fluctuation in the gravitational field, triggered by the inflation phase, but there are, for example, during a phase transition during the first epoch of the universe, and also all other more exotic mechanisms. But it is, there is something like that. It is in principle really, really important from a scientific point of view. It is also quite weak. So maybe we will not have yet enough sensitivity to see it. But I would say one point that is often done about LISA is that LISA is guaranteed to be able to see this kind of background. And Einstein telescope too, in principle.
I was wondering if you have some updates on pulsar timing arrays or comments about it.
No, the last new I know about is for 1 year ago, and there was an article which I don't remember now, but it was a collaboration article in which there is the idea is that there was some evidence from, by the way, from this kind of diffused background search, but they are not yet at the level to do a claim, because it is not yet significant enough. By itself, this is a kind of an analysis that improve when you increase the time of, the, of your measurement. Until you arrive to some intrinsic limit, which is given by the precision of, by the noise in the clock, given by Newton star reference. So I think that this, but there are some good clock around, and they are learning also to put several clocks together to have a better estimate, and. As I said, my guess is that we are near some kind of claim also in this case. Okay.
Yes, indeed, we have to stop now this discussion. I'd like to thank the speaker again.